long hard days. They don't say God's changed my ways, changed my ways, those evil ways. So I set out, cross that way, strike them down to make them pay and change their ways, their evil ways. But I can't.
Some measure of consent. It's exceedingly difficult to see how pure terrorism can function indefinitely. It can function for a fairly long time, but I think sooner or later you have to bring in an element of persuasion, an element of getting people to consent to what is happening to them. Well, it seems to me that the nature of the ultimate revolution with which we are now faced is precisely this, that we are in process of developing a whole series of techniques which will enable the controlling oligarchy, who have always existed and presumably always will exist, to get people actually to love their servitude. This is, seems to me, the ultimate in malevolent revolution, shall we say. And this is a
in malevolent revolution. There you go. And you know that doesn't sound at all like what's happened in America. What he described, right? Getting people to producing a painless concentration camp for entire societies, so that people will, in fact, have their liberties taken away from them. You know, what of the Bill of Rights remains? And that bill was just, you know, including but not limited to. Having their liberties taken away from them, but they will rather enjoy it because they will be distracted from any desire to rebel by propaganda or brainwashing enhanced by pharmacological methods. That doesn't happen in America today. We don't see people that just, their face is contorted into, you know, kind of a Joker looking kind of a contortion, because their brainwashing has been enhanced by pharmacological methods. I seem to see that every day. And he said this seems to be the final revolution. And so, you know, again, Pharmakia, Revelation chapter 18, verse 23, all nations were deceived by your sorcery, your pharmakia. And I think, what is it, Galatians chapter 5 is the other place that that Greek root is mentioned, I forget. Anyway, and then from there, you know, you think of Romans chapter 1. I mean, I always think of that, professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. You know, after verse 18, basically, there's the admonition that we know. It's inherent in all of us. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen. Wait, what's invisible has been clearly seen? Being understood through what has been made, so that they are without excuse. Oh, well, that's interesting. For even though they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks, but they became futile in their speculations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools, and all hell broke loose after that. I would say quite literally. So continuing in Jeffrey Steinberg's article, that was Romans chapter 1. Huxley's cohort in the 1950s experimentation with psychotropic drugs Top of the third hour, by the way, of today's broadcast. Sorry. This Friday, August 30th, 2019. So I'm reading, you know, how did we get here, basically? The 18th anniversary of September 11, the, you know, horrific reminder, September 11, 2001. 18th anniversary is coming up just around the corner. And so we're talking about how we got here. I mean, I did a little deal in the first hour and I guess throughout the remainder of the broadcast on some of the talking points that I think are important. How did we get here ideologically? We've been marinating in a soup for decades. And we had been before, but now it's much worse. And so what got us to that point and what has taken us further? Maybe it's time to unplug this monstrosity. So the two pieces that I intended to read, and one of which I'm reading now, are From Cybernetics to Littleton Techniques of Mind Control by Jeffrey Steinberg, published in May 2000, the May 2000 issue of Lyndon LaRouche's Executive Intelligence Review, and the other companion article is John Whitehead's The Rise of the American Gestapo, Has It Already Happened Here?, published over at the Rutherford Institute July 30th, 2019. These are sort of bookends of the discussion in my mind. How did we get here? You know, to Jenna and Washington's call, the horrific instances of things and their, you know, high-profile incidents where something happens, a strategy of tension incident. What's the strategy of tension? Everyone should be versed in what that is. You know, we should all understand these Machiavellian ne'er-do-wells. But that's how mankind has been conquered for, well, centuries now. You just, you know, basically say you're going to do a thing and you do the opposite. Or you say you're not going to do a thing and you do the thing. It's, you know, it's Machiavelli. It's Sun Tzu applied to politics, or, you know, you just go around making Faustian bargains with everybody and then you don't pay off. And, you know, we would think that after centuries of this, people get wise to it. All right. Huxley's cohort in the 1950s experimentation with psychotropic drugs, Dr. Timothy Leary of Harvard University's psychology department, provided another glimpse into the perverted minds of the Russell Huxley Frankfurt School crowd. In his autobiographical account of the Harvard University psychedelic drug project, Flashback, Leary quoted Huxley, quote, "These brain drugs, mass-produced in the laboratories, will bring about vast changes in society. This will happen with or without you or me. All we can do is spread the word. The obstacle to this evolution, Timothy, is the Bible." So said Aldous Huxley, anyway. Leary then added, quote, "We had run up against the Judeo-Christian commitment to one God, one religion, one reality that has cursed Europe for centuries and America since our founding days. Drugs that opened the mind to multiple realities inevitably led to a polytheistic view of the universe. We sensed that the time for a new humanist religion based on intelligence, good-natured pluralism, and scientific paganism had arrived," end quote. As these monstrous notions of mass social engineering were being presented as the humanistic, quote-unquote, alternative to world war, in the age of the atom and hydrogen bomb, two crucial projects were being launched that would shape the implementation of this brave new world and bring us today to the world of Littleton, Paducah, Jonesboro, Doom, Quake, and Duke Nukem. And of course, on from there to today, you know, oh my gosh. So, you know, this I have to add, John in Tennessee sending me the article recently, you know, July 30th article, CNBC, the teen Fortnite champ who just won $3 million practices 6 hours a day, even on school days. Kyle Giersdorf just won the Fortnite World Cup. And so what do you suppose that's going to do? what is going to happen. Kids everywhere are going to want $3 million, are going to want to win $3 million, and so what are they going to be doing? Littleton, Paducah, Jonesboro, Doom, Quake, Duke Nukem, little Manchurian patsies everywhere. The Authoritarian Personality. The first of the two projects was launched in January 1943 by a team of three social psychologists at the University of California at Berkeley. Else Frankel Brunswick, a founding member of the Frankfurt Institute for Social Research, known as the Frankfurt School, Daniel J. Levinson, and R. Nevitt Sanford. What started out as a modest $500 grant to study the roots of anti-Semitism would soon mushroom into the biggest mass social profiling project ever undertaken in America up until that time. In May 1944, the American Jewish Committee established a Department of Scientific Research, which was headed by Frankfurt School Director Max Horkheimer. Horkheimer established a project called Studies in Prejudice, with generous funding from the AJC and other agencies, including Rockefeller Foundations. And so, you know, it wasn't the 50s yet, but we didn't learn anything from the Race Committee investigation anyway, so who cares? The Studies in Prejudice offered employment to a number of Frankfurt School members who, for various reasons, were not co-opted directly into the war effort. For example, Herbert Marcuse and Franz Neumann were brought into the research and analysis section of the Office of Strategic Services, or OSS, the forerunner to today's Central Intelligence Agency. Head of Massing, Mary Yehuda, Morris Janowitz, and Theodore W. Adorno all worked on the studies and under Horkheimer's direction. They all formally reconstituted the International Institute of Social Research, the transplanted incarnation of the original Frankfurt School of Weimar Germany. And so, speaking of the Frankfurt School, the short version of this historical trip is to go to Friedrich Hayek's Road to Serfdom and see what he's saying in the early chapters about the ideological and philosophical roots of things. And so the Frankfurt School that, you know, essentially precipitated the collapse of Weimar Germany and the rise of Hitler's Germany was imported into America. Need I say more? The most significant of the five studies in prejudice produced for the AJC during 1944 to 1950 was The Authoritarian Personality, published in 1950. Authors Adorno, Frankel Brunswick, Levinson, and Sanford assembled a large research team from the Berkeley Public Opinion Study and the International Institute of Social Research to conduct thousands of interviews of Americans to profile their allegedly deep-seated tendencies toward authoritarianism, prejudice, and anti-Semitism. Now, think of this research in terms of social media. I digress. Dr. William Morrow, the leading protege of Dr. Kurt Lewin, who was one key bridge figure between the Frankfurt School and the Tavistock Institute, was a research director for the Authoritarian Personality Project. The study was an exercise in self-fulfilling prophecy and Marxist Freudian self-delusion. And again, I feel like, you know, backing up to Nesta Webster said about this kind of stuff. To me, that's, you know, World Revolution, the Plot Against Civilization, Nesta Webster published 1921. When she said, when you see stuff like this and people getting funding and doing these things in secret to control and manipulate people, you know, and speaking of Marxist Freudian, that's exactly what was, you know, Marxism is the infiltration of the workers, people, the naive, unwitting masses, and pitting them against themselves and one another. So Nesta Webster said, when you see this, it's difficult to write these things calmly, for to deceive the people whose simple faith and lack of education prevent them seeing whether they're being led is as cowardly as to guide a blind man into a ditch. But that's precisely what's happening here with these ne'er-do-wells. The study was an exercise in self-fulfilling prophecy and Marxist Freudian self-delusion. Long before the first survey questionnaire was drafted, Horkheimer and Adorno had written exhaustively about the authoritarian, quote-unquote, character of the American nuclear family, about the problem, quote-unquote, of the American people's belief in a transcendent monotheistic God, and about the underlying fascist character of all forms of American patriotism. And do you hear reverberations of that on through to today? The problem with capitalism, I think one of the biggest problems with capitalism is that it really hasn't been given a chance to flourish in America, because you have guys saying that competition is a sin. Continuing, they cooked the survey data in advance by devising a series of scales purporting to measure the American population's tendency toward anti-Semitism, ethnocentricity, anti-democratic ideology, and ultimately fascism. Can you not feel the reverberations of this somewhere, you know, in the dialectical soup of this between Fox News and CNN, shall we say? It's precisely what continues to this day. Frankfurt School is driving the news cycle. In a sense. Not surprisingly, the research team found the American... And so what is the purpose of this? What's going to happen? Well, we'll get to that. Just listen. Not surprisingly, the research team found the American public guilty as charged, quote-unquote, and produced dire warnings that unless a dramatic overhaul of the American ideology and mass culture were carried out, America would soon emerge as a Fourth Reich, repeating the horrors of Hitler on an even grander scale. But what if the folks who actually engineered that went somewhere else and infected another place to do exactly that? What if the warning came from the folks that initiated it? Kind of like when you have agencies come in and, gosh, every time they do a drill, there's some kind of a high-profile incident. Well, if we could just get out in front of it. These guys are always doing drills. You know, continuity of government kind of stuff, and coordination of agencies across, you know, interdepartmental, blah blah blah, federal, state, local, multi-jurisdictional task forces, interoperational, blah blah blah. We're gonna have a drill. Places, everyone. If you want to make sure that everyone, when you want to stage something, don't you need a rehearsal? No one gets wise to the fact that every drill, there's a high-profile incident. Huh. Don't have the drills. See how many high-profile incidents you have. And have Grandma carrying concealed. Have Grandma, you know, carrying a little 380 or, you know, something in her purse. And I bet you won't see a drill, or you won't see a high-profile incident. Want to bet? I mean, I'd take that bet, quite frankly. I would challenge the FBI. To conduct a high-profile incident in an area where, A, you haven't had a drill, and B, Grandma's packing. So, continuing, the authors of The Authoritarian Personality let it all hang out in the concluding chapter of the book, in which they summarized their findings and spelled out their recipe for social transformation. What is the recipe? We'll talk when we come back. Stick around, more right after this break.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
The reviews for Extendivite are amazing. Here are some from Amazon. By Christine, great for heart palpitations. By Anne, before I started using this product, every afternoon, my ankles and my hands would be swollen. That doesn't happen anymore. So if that part of their advertising is true, I have to assume that the rest of it is also. Not to mention that when I had my yearly blood test, only a few weeks after beginning to use this product, my cholesterol had dropped over 30 points. I'm going to continue to take it. By Croc, I love this product. It really works. By Brad, works great, thank you. Tell us your story. Get your Extendivite today. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Republic Broadcasting Network depends on listener support of our advertisers and of our sponsors. We'd like to especially thank all of you who have taken advantage of our fundraiser with FrontSight Bonus. Those who are now FrontSight members, please train as soon as possible for your sake and for that of our nation. And please consider sharing your training and what you've learned when you arrive home. Republic Broadcasting Network has to stop promoting this fundraiser on air and on the website in just a few days. Dr. Ignatius Piazza, president of FrontSight, made a gracious exception to his no media rule for us at Republic Broadcasting Network. Thank you, Dr. Piazza. And once you've been to FrontSight, feel free to call your favorite host and share your experience on the air. We can continue this fundraiser without media help, but it'll be totally up to the listeners to spread the information. Please call Dan Sutterfield in Missouri at 573-465-2356, 573-465-2356. That's 573-465-2356.
It's the good life, full of fun, seems to be the ideal. Yes, the good life lets you hide all the sadness you feel. You won't really fall in love, 'cause you can't take the chance. So be honest with yourself, don't try to fake romance. It's the good life to be free and explore the unknown. Like the heartaches, when you learn, you must face them alone. Please remember, I still want you. And in case you wonder why, well, just wake up, kiss that good life goodbye.
Back. So the authors of The Authoritarian Personality, I mean, this stuff is so, we've been so desensitized to this stuff, you know, I might as well be reading, I don't know, grab something, you know, some kind of occupational handbook or manual or something. Do we even care anymore in America? Has the ultimate revolution occurred? You know, which sort of hints at John Whitehead's article, The Rise of the American Gestapo. Has it already happened here? Learned helplessness. Tell us, Dr. Martin Seligman, is the learning complete? The authors of The Authoritarian Personality let it all hang out in the concluding chapter of the book, in which they summarized their findings and spelled out their recipe for social transformation. Remember, it was all based on cooked data. They wanted to come to a particular conclusion, so in technocratic fashion, they manipulated the data to, they tortured the data to sing the tune they wanted that pig to sing. It seems obvious that the modification of the potentially fascist structure cannot be achieved by psychological means alone. The task is comparable to that eliminating neurosis or delinquency or nationalism from the world. These are products of the total organization of society and are to be changed only as that society is changed. It is not for the psychologist to say how such changes are to be brought about. The problem is one which requires the efforts of all social scientists. All that we would insist upon is that in the councils or roundtables where the problem is considered and action planned, the psychologist should have a voice. We believe that the scientific understanding of society must include an understanding of what it does to people. And that it is possible to have social reforms, even broad and sweeping ones, which though desirable in their own right, would not necessarily change the structure of the prejudiced personality. For the fascist potential to change, or even to be held in check, there must be an increase in people's capacity to see themselves and to be themselves, which is a weird psychedelic sort of concept. See yourself and be yourself. This cannot be achieved by the manipulation of people, however well grounded in modern psychology the devices of manipulation may be. It is here that psychology may play its most important role. Techniques for overcoming resistance, developed mainly in the field of individual psychotherapy, can be improved and adapted for use with groups and even for use on a mass scale, end quote. The authors conclude with this most revealing proposition, quote, "We need not suppose that appeal to emotion belongs to those who strive in the direction of fascism, while democratic propaganda must limit itself to reason and restraint. If fear and destructiveness are the major emotional sources of fascism, Eros belongs mainly to democracy." Eros was precisely the weapon that the Frankfurt School and their fellow travelers employed over the next 50 years to create a cultural paradigm shift away from the so-called authoritarian, quote-unquote, matrix of man in the living image of God, imago viva Dei, the sanctity of the nuclear family, and the superiority of the republican form of nation-state over all other forms of political organization. They transformed American culture toward an erotic, perverse matrix associated with the present politically correct tyranny of tolerance for dehumanizing drug abuse, sexual perversion, and the glorification of violence. For the Marxist Freudian revolutionaries of the Frankfurt School, the ultimate antidote to the hated Western Judeo-Christian civilization was to tear that civilization down from the inside by turning out generations of necrophiliacs. Here we are to where we entered this article in recent weeks. Stick around, we'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
So, are you tired of being tired? Well, then it's time to get the tea. Hey, it's Lisa here to tell you about this all-natural, all-organic tea I've been drinking that has had great results for over 20 years. It's called Life Change Tea, and it's specially formulated to help detoxify and cleanse your kidneys, liver, colon, and blood all at once. The colon is one of the most ignored organs in the human body. The faster that waste is eliminated from the body, the less time that waste sits in our intestines, spreading toxins to our bloodstream. This tea helps cleanse chemicals caused by outside intruders from our entire digestive system, and get this, weight loss can be a side effect. And with continued use of the tea, you can experience clearer, healthier, younger looking skin, increased energy, and a happier outlook on life. So if you're tired of being tired, get the Life Change Tea at GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com, and like me, you'll be glad you did.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets, even with a growing audience every day. RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org, and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT-TODAY.
Welcome back. So the Frankfurt School chooses primarily as its weapon Eros, the erotic, the perverse, and those kinds of things. And so you can see the reason, when you look at passages like Romans chapter 1, there's an obvious need for these guys to get rid of the Bible. And at the same time that the Frankfurt guys are doing this, just a little bit later, the Reese Committee reveals that the Rockefeller Foundation is helping other efforts to leverage the other weapon of fear and terrorism, fear and destructiveness. And that was abundantly clear in the Reese Committee's findings of, remember, Miss Catherine Casey goes to, check in on the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, and she discovers from their own meeting minutes from the very beginning, they're trying to steer America into, steer America in an entirely new direction, and they settle on the method most effective as plunging us into perpetual war. So you have this sort of coordinated effort being waged by forces from on high, shall we say. Anyway, let's take a break for a second and go back to the phones and grab William in Montana. William, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Morning, Chris.
William?
You know, when you, whenever I think of 1984, a thousand things come crashing in on me because there is a huge, long-reaching history that led up to that book. You know, it was, you know, it was published like in, I guess the first writing of it was in 1943, 1944. You know, Orwell talked about, you know, like when you said, what if the agency who warns us about the danger, was the, actually the agency that created the danger?
Mm-hmm.
And when, you know, this was, he was writing this, right, after, you know, World War II, or during the ending of World War II. And, you know, what if 1984 wasn't so much a warning against totalitarian and perpetual war, but kind of an outline of how this could be used to bring about the necessary control that you need to preclude, you know, wars or wars that pop up on their own. And
yeah,
if you start looking at the outline, you start running into all types. And when you talk about the Frankfurt School, and you can go back to the Tavistock Institute, you can also... when you mentioned Leary, I was at Harvard and in the late 60s. I met him. I didn't actually talk to him very much. He wasn't very interested in, you know, talking to people. He was more interested in people listening to him. But if you talk about Leary and Richard Alpert and all of those guys who started the psychedelic movement, you also, behind them was Murray, Henry Murray. And Murray was a very influential psychotherapist at Harvard. You know, he was there in the 30s. You know, Leary basically learned a bunch from him. And, you know, Murray was the guy who created the Unabomber, you know, by using these very techniques that were outlined in George Orwell's 1984. I mean, techniques of, you know, how to deconstruct a personality, you know, through trauma.
Yeah.
so that you can actually reconstruct them into, you know, recreate them in your own image of being able to be controlled and to love your servitude. And, you know, Ted Kaczynski, you know, who became the Unabomber, was actually inducted into this program by Murray. He didn't know that it was like a three-year program of basically deconstructing his mind through all types of humiliation and very deep, you know, many of these psychological techniques were actually developed by the Tavistock Institute in England, you know, when they were trying to figure out how to put soldiers back on the front who had become shell-shocked.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you start looking at all of this stuff, you'll find that this blueprint, you know, the blueprint of the tyranny, the insidious tyranny that we're under, was laid down long, long ago. And if you actually trace that, all of those people, through all of those institutions, you start getting a better understanding of what we're facing now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think, you know, the whole thing of 1984, it's interesting that the thing that I was always amazed at with that, you know, that the opening part of that novel, there was a man by the name of Emmanuel Goldstein, and he was introduced, you know, during their 2 minutes of hate, you know, when the television screens would come on and Big Brother would have this, you know, conduct this 2 minutes of hate. Emmanuel Goldstein was introduced as the enemy of the people, and he once was an important party member, and he became a traitor. And although he was sentenced to death, he escaped, and he was leading this group of revolutionaries, you know, and so, you know, the party always brought him up as, you know, this is the terrorist. This is the terrorist that we must be afraid of, because he's going, and many of the problems that developed in their society were blamed on these terrorists. But the interesting thing is there's a very good chance that Emmanuel Goldstein didn't even actually exist.
Right.
You know, he wasn't real. Mm-hmm. But it was because through television and through this telescreen, his image and his insidious process was always put before the people to justify the tightening of control.
Yeah.
And please protect us. Please protect us from these terrorists. But the actual terrorist that was put in front of their face probably didn't exist. And I would say that many of the terrorists that are put in front of our faces today don't actually exist. And guess who created them?
Right.
The people who are asking us to let them protect us from the terrorists that doesn't exist that they created.
Well, you know, so, gosh, man, like you said, a million things come crashing in. So, you know, Emmanuel Goldstein, I think of, you know, there's one character of infamy that Bill Cooper told us, don't listen. They're going to try to tell you this guy did something. And then suddenly, you know, we see this guy, and Aaron Russo basically said the same thing. Nick Rockefeller said, they were all telling me, yeah, you know, we're going to be running around looking in caves for people. It's going to be ridiculous, but, you know, that's what we're going to do. And next thing you know, there's this guy who just gets younger and more handsome all the time, every time you see him. And that's kind of curious, but I don't know. I guess there's nothing to see there. And then Trevor Aronson, speaking of Trevor Aronson, back in 2015, he wrote the article How the FBI created a Terrorist, Sammy Osmakosh. And, you know, kind of an Osama bin Laden, you know, look-alike in a sense. And the FBI staged the whole theatrical event, helped him make his martyrdom video, gave him an AK-47 and a suicide bomber vest and lots of fun stuff. Yeah. Helped him make his martyrdom video.
You know, and I think one of the big, you know, also in that book is outlined the, you know, the three warring factions in the world: Oceania, East Asia, and Eurasia. And this comes, you know, directly from, you know, Mackinder, you know, who was a geographer in the turn of the 1900s, who basically outlined what was going to be happening. And, you know, the whole, when you get into World War II, World War I, the Habsburg dynasty preceding that, you start understanding this sort of three-way division of the world that was really used you know, by many of these countries in the run-up to World War I and World War II, and many of the structures that were laid down and many of the perceptions that were laid down in the early 1900s set the stage for what we're dealing with now in the Middle East and the whole conflict of Iran. And, you know, you talked about the five countries.
Yeah, seven countries in 5 years.
Yeah, 7 countries in 5 years. I mean, who is the final target of that? If you go into this Mackinder philosophy that was laid down and was followed by many countries during the world wars,
absolutely,
the real danger was the pivot of history, which is the Russia, you know, Germany potential of getting together. You know, that was the thing that the British and the and their Atlantic ally, which they considered we were still their colony, they were the ones that was the big potential that needed to be stopped in order for Oceania, which are the islands, you know, the British Empire, the American Empire, they needed to protect themselves against this huge landmass coming together. And if you actually look at some of these things and the machinations that went down, you know, in before World War One and World War Two, you see an active, you know, this was not just happenstance. And if you start digging deep into that, it turns your world upside down.
Absolutely.
The reason I have to go stand in wheat fields is not because I think that's the end all. That's where I need to go to repair myself from the knowledge and the seeking refinement of these things to try to get to the basis of what are we involved in? Who's calling the shot?
Yeah.
That's what your program, that's what the whole program today was about. Who is really calling the shots? And how is it possible? What do we rely upon to allow us to face that after we have come to a knowledge of it? I mean, if you don't have knowledge of this stuff, you're basically fumbling around in the dark. But boy, if you do have knowledge of this, you've got a huge responsibility, and I mean, if it is crazy making, it is.
Yeah.
It will drive you crazy as you start uncovering what's behind the veil.
And it's all right, sort of out in the open. I mean, when you're talking about the history, you know, I talk about the, you know, the term Balkanization to me is one of the Rosetta Stones of that discussion, and the way that the Ottoman Empire was destroyed, and not just like the way, but the methods that were employed and how that continues,
right,
and how, you know, Saudi Arabia and so-called Israel emerged on the world stage just sort of magically. And I still have a globe from my grandparents. You know, we have song, you know, the Four Lads version, Istanbul, not Constantinople. And that's old history. I mean, it's right out in the open, and you can still get maps and globes and things of the world, kind of like who was it that said that earlier? Rich, I think, in Texas Today, talked about the sort of property lines being redrawn, and you can still get maps and globes with that history that has been destroyed just in the last century. And it's right out in plain sight, and the names of the people and the books they've written are still, you know, you can still get them, but like you said, crazy making. I mean, to see it.
I'm a professionally trained, my undergraduate degree is in geography, and I've got a whole map drawer of these old maps with notes in the margin, you know, and I have pored over these old maps of the Ottoman Empire, of the so-called Middle East, and of, you know, European, the whole thing of Crimea, Ukraine, Russia, you know, India, Pakistan. It was interesting that I was reading something about Cameron, the British Prime Minister Cameron was in Pakistan, and some reporters asked him, like, why don't you take the stage and straighten this thing out between Pakistan, you know, the whole Kashmirian thing. Why don't you do that? Britain has a lot of influence, and why aren't you playing a bigger part in that? And Cameron very candidly said, I'm not interested in putting Britain at the forefront of bringing about a solution to a problem that it actually created.
Yeah. Leading from the rear, gents. Leading from the rear.
Yeah, and people in the room nearly fell over. It's like even he didn't think that was the best thing to have said, but it was very true. And, I have maps, that are from the 40s, and you start looking at this, and I always tell people that if you want to understand what's going on in the Middle East and with this whole Iran, Pakistan, Afghanistan, if you want to understand that, just get one of these older maps and just look at it. Don't pay a lot of attention to borders and names, but just look at the physical layout. And, that's what Mackinder was all about when he did publish this thing in 1905 about geography. He said there is a physical landmass that often dictates what's going to be happening. This Asia Minor, Turkey, Iran, I mean, it's a land bridge between East and West. And if you are like the British, during the 1900s, You want to control the transit across that bridge, and the best way to do that is to set up a variety of conflicting roadblocks. Mm-hmm. At least you can stall the traffic, and then you can go behind the scenes and try to manipulate these warring factions and keep everything under control.
Yeah,
and that is at the basis of this, and it's so complex. And at one time, in the 40s, I've read a lot of history books back in the 40s, and they had an entirely different take on what was happening, in the world. What were the forces that were active in the world? And in many ways, from after World War I, there was a concerted effort to basically erase that understanding and to substitute entertainment, to substitute recriminations, paralysis. We don't need people knowing, and just like you were talking about the ruling class, you don't really need the masses to be educated and and understanding these processes. When you bring up stuff about Jefferson, and his informing the people, that was a big revolutionary process of saying we need to educate people in order to be intelligent citizens, rightfully dividing the word of truth. They have to have this knowledge, but the whole British Orwellian sort of concept is we need to eliminate that. They can't be controlled if they have any degree of intelligence. We need to entertain them and make them addicted to their entertainment. This is a big subject. I'm really glad that you keep coming back to it and you keep going over this. This is something that we really have to understand what's going on today.
I completely agree, and it's in a certain sense, I think it's really difficult to get your arms around, but once you start diving into it, I think it starts to become, not easier, but you get more of a sense of a lay of the land, I think, kind of like what you're saying. I mean, it's not so overwhelming, I guess. Two things I would add to what you said. I wanted to mention the Harvard psilocybin project. If people aren't familiar with Leary, Alpert, Murray, Huxley, McClellan, those guys, Harvard psilocybin project is interesting. And what you're saying about the British and the efforts to, as I've put it, you know, basically you go into a neighborhood and you tell people on opposite ends of the street, you know, this guy wants to get you. And then you tell the other guy, that guy wants to get you. And you make sure that you control the information flow and you have intelligence, you know, a network of intelligence. And so basically total information awareness equals full spectrum dominance.
And, you know, it's interesting that I was there during that period of time. I mean, there was a lot of, I saw Richard Alpert, I actually knew him personally. I had lots of conversations with him. He was the partner of Tim Leary. I watched that whole thing go down. But what's interesting, I was there, and I didn't know what was happening. You know, even though I considered myself at the time very intelligent, you know, these forces were deeply hidden. I mean, they mm-hmm. did not want to be known.
Even though they were sort of hidden in plain sight, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. Right in your face, and I bought a lot of the party line. They told me that this was going to be, I mean, why wouldn't you want to expand your consciousness?
And why wouldn't you listen to these people when these are, you know, venerated folks at a, you know, an Ivy League institution, which is exactly why I mentioned what Chamath Palihapitiya said back in 2017 at the Stanford Graduate School of Business talk.
And, you know, it's interesting, just down the street, I lived right across the street from Harvard Square and the yard and the Widener Library. But just, about a half a mile down the street was MIT. And there, you know, the father and forebears of the whole AI and cybernetics was going on. And they had another answer. You know, the Harvard was saying, we can reconstruct the mind of people so that they will love their servitude. And the people down the street at MIT was saying, we can set loose a software-mediated intelligence that will help us create the new world. And it was interesting that I watched both of those sort of evolve. And I knew people that were in school there and were taking classes from, you know, Norbert Werner and all of these important people. And, everybody was caught up in the almost euphoria of the Brave New World. Mm-hmm. You know, we were going to be the leaders. We were going to be the vanguard for a new type of intelligence. And this was like in the 60s, and here it is, you know, a long, long time from there. And I'm just starting to get a clue.
Wow.
And fitting all these pieces together.
Wow. Thank you, William.
Thank you, Chris.
Much appreciated. He's the unimpeachable witness with the first-hand account. So my apologies to Murr, Andrew, and Fred, but, you know, listen to William, I think probably right. Yeah, that'll do it for today's broadcast. I hope you have a good weekend. It's always truly an honor and a pleasure. Take care. God bless.
Even old New York was once New Amsterdam. Why they changed it, I can't say.
People just liked it better that way.
Take me back to Constantinople.
No, you can't go back to Constantinople. Now it's Istanbul, not Constantinople. Why did Constantinople get the works? That's nobody's business but the Turks.
Legal issue and your property can be restored to you and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 keep it today.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.